Welcome to The Why Factor, a chance to work out why we do what we do. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Train tragedy. Two men die after being hit by a train in Melbourne.
This is an ABC News special report.
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
This is Al Jazeera.
The unmistakable sound of news from around the world. How does that make you feel? Do the hairs stand up on your neck? News has a powerful effect on people. But why do we have it? BBC World Service, I'm David Baker. Welcome to The Why Factor. First up, many people would say we need the news to keep up with what's going on around us. And that, it turns out, has deep roots.
It's a survival factor.
Mitchell Stevens is professor of journalism at New York University. He's written a history of news.
If you're sitting around the campfire with a bunch of other hunter-gatherers, there's a whole bunch of news that'll be valuable for your survival. I mean, news on where the good berries are, news on where the good nuts are, news on where likely hunting targets are, and also news on potential threats. Where's that hostile tribe last been seen?
And, he says, that's just as relevant to us now in the 21st century.
We want to know what's going on between the United States and Russia. We want to know about the future of the EU. We want to know about political events in Pakistan. Some of this, you know, could have practical value for us. We come from a long line of people who are addicted to news because they survive better because of that.
And that knowledge can also make us more comfortable about the world we live in.
There's all of these things in the world that make us really, really scared. All of these, you know, existential threats knocking about the place, whether it's climate change or whether it's ISIS and terrorism. And I think a part of us thinks that watching the news, engaging with it as much as we possibly can, means that because we'll have more information, we'll be more in control of the situation, and that therefore, maybe at some level, the bad things won't happen to us, or we'll be able to mitigate the bad things. But this is not the case.
This is Rob Orchard, a British journalist with a very particular interest in the news.
A huge percentage of the news that we're reading here in the West and in free countries is not actually news at all. It's spurious nonsense. It's celebrity fluff. It's stuff about the royal family. It's people getting angry with something that somebody's written on Twitter in response to somebody else who got angry and made a comment that they didn't really mean at a conference, and it's blown out of all kind of proportion. I thank God that I live, you know, in a free country where I can be deluged with inane nonsense a lot of the time. But also our problem is picking out the important stuff among all of the chaff.
And sometimes news seems to manufacture its own chaff. Especially on a slow news day, it can feel like the news is based on some gaffe that a politician made on an early morning news programme, which is then spun out and talked about and reacted to through the day. The news eating itself, if you like. And we often find ourselves in slow news days, even 10,000 years ago. Mitchell Stevens.
You know, things might have gotten a little slow around those campfires. So it's fun to have some gossip. Hey, did you see who I saw holding hands with so-and-so the other night? Did you see when this other person tried to start a fire and the whole thing blew up in his face? Wasn't that funny?
That sounds very familiar. I mean, let's face it, pretty much all of our social media feeds are made up of these two types of news. Survival news, the links and articles that help us navigate the world, and gossip, who was seen with whom and what they were up to. And that's not surprising. Both of these types of news bond people. They keep friendships lubricated. And they give families something to talk about at dinner.
My father would come home from work, and I was, let's say, 9 years old, and I'd run to meet him, and the first thing I'd do is grab the newspapers out of his hand. I was interested in comics. I was interested, very interested in sports, but I also paid some attention to the news stories.
Young Mitchell's family would sit around the table talking about what was going on in the world.
I don't remember actually doing homework for the dinner table conversation, but when we would start talking about Red China or Castro in Cuba or the Soviet Union, you know, I was able to understand the conversations and occasionally contribute my two cents.
Good evening, everybody. The White House announces that there will be no new statement until tomorrow. This means, of course, that discussions by radio telephone are being held. Discussions concerning Japan's offer of surrender.
Washington. This takes us back to the 1930s and 1940s.
When this decision will be communicated to Tokyo via the governments of Switzerland and Sweden, we are not told.
In the United States, there was one individual who was as well known as any journalist has ever been, and also managed to tell the news to as large a percentage of the American people as anyone ever has.
Meanwhile, the formal end of the war is in abeyance. It even took time for the surrender offer to become official today. The Tokyo announcement by radio.
At 6:45 every night, Lowell Thomas would come on and tell the news. Dinner conversation would stop. Kids weren't allowed to say anything for those 15 minutes while Lowell Thomas told the news. These were the years of the Great Depression. These were the years of Stalin and Mussolini and the buildup towards Hitler, and then the years of World War II, when so many families had people who were in the military and facing death. But this was a solemn ritual, and Lowell Thomas' sign-off was, so long until tomorrow. And there were many of these households where that was the cue for people to bring dessert to the table, and then conversation could resume and people could resume talking about their day.
It's incredible how staid and old-fashioned that feels now. Since the invention of rolling news and news on our phones, we seem to be surrounded by a teeming cloud of news that comes at us from all sides. Rob Orchard.
There's been a massive proliferation of media outlets because everybody could become a publisher, everybody did. And so you can now find every kind of stripe of news coverage and every kind of political colour that you could possibly wish. And from, you know, every country in the world, it's all accessible to you. I mean, it's amazingly exciting. So all of this has happened. And then all of these other things have come in. So blogging, and then live blogging, and then Twitter, and then Facebook, and then podcasting, and then, you know, video blogging, and so on. So there's been this explosion of access to media, and obviously that's created some wonderful things. But the other thing that it's really created is this overwhelming tide of news information.
And that's information that we're all busy sharing with each other, using news to bond, just like Mitchell's family did around the dinner table. And that feels like an important function of news. It gets us out of our shells.
You know, I'm kind of a cut-off person. I spend a lot of time alone. I can be borderline agoraphobic. I can easily be one of those people who goes downstairs to lock the door for the evening and discover that it's still locked from the night before because I haven't been outside all day. So the news helps to combat this inclination. It's imperfect. It's in some ways impersonal. It's certainly a measure removed, but it includes other people in my life, and it makes my experience of being alive more communal, you know, so I feel I'm a part of something larger.
This is novelist Lionel Shriver. She happily admits to being a newsaholic.
News is history in the making. In general, the news makes me feel caught up in a larger story than my own. So that the historical story of the time that I'm living, I'm inhabiting. It is always a unique moment and will never come around again. And one of the things that will distinguish our lives on this planet is when we were alive. You know, what happened while we were here? Not just to us personally, but what happened to everybody. And I like being a part of that. That to me is a huge aspect of being alive, and it makes me feel less alone.
So no wonder we love the news. It gives us something to gossip about. It bonds us with our friends and family. It helps us feel less alone. What's not to like? But as with a lot of pleasures, there's also a darker side.
I will often have the radio on. And then I might pull out this antique thing that arrives at my back door every morning. It's called a newspaper. In my case, the New York Times. You know, I do get alerts from CNN and the Wall Street Journal. I will check nightly news on TV. When I'm switching between cable channels, I try to pause and watch Fox News for a while to see what they're saying. You know, it's very hard for me sometimes to pull myself away from my Twitter feed. I'm addicted to news.
How much time do you spend on the news each day?
I've had times where I've had to admit that I accomplished almost nothing that day because I spent so much time keeping up with what seemed to be this tremendously important story and how it was playing out.
How do you feel when you get to the end of the day and realize you spent the whole day watching or following news?
I feel lousy.
And it's not just professors of journalism who are addicted to news. We all know someone who can't stop checking the headlines on their phone. And what is Facebook if it isn't a constant stream of news? Kevin Maguire, associate editor of one of Britain's best-selling tabloid newspapers, The Daily Mirror, admits that he's a news addict. That's his job. But, he says, there are a lot of people who don't work in the media who are just as hooked as he is.
I've seen people, whether they're plumbers, electricians, business people, politicians, sports people, actors, they will make a date to look at the news. They will put on the radio, they'll pick up a paper, they will watch TV, they will be checking their phones now, which is one of the new ways of consuming news. People consume news constantly because they're interested in what's going on.
And how about Lionel Shriver? Is she an addict too?
I think it is an addiction. I guess it's been going on for decades, but honestly, it's been getting worse. I think there's an immediacy to television news that is quite seductive. It seems to be happening right then. It's coming into your living room, and it's real people participating in the act of giving you the news. And I think that this fix that news addicts are looking for, the television more readily provides, that sense of being in the present. This single moment that only happens once in the history of the universe, which is hard to get your head around, really. And it can be quite riveting. And it feeds this fear of missing out problem. If something has just happened, the television news is going to tell you all about it, whereas the newspaper starts feeling immediately dated and old.
Addiction, fix. These are strong words. So does Lionel want to try and kick her news habit?
The solution to most addictions is to go cold turkey. And I'm not willing to go cold turkey on the news. And I don't think that having this particular addiction is altogether negative and destructive. I do get a lot out of it. And I think that my experience of my life is enlarged by knowing what's going on in other people's lives and not just in mine.
So what is it about news that's so compelling? Well, one thing is that in our internet-connected world, it just keeps on coming at us. Kevin Maguire.
News never stops, it never sleeps, it continues, it goes on. We used to talk about 24/7. We used to talk about every hour of every day in the week. Now, it's sort of every minute of every hour because everything has speeded up, and it's speeded up with the internet and social media. If you're an hour out now, you've missed the bus. The news has moved on. People want to look at something else. So we're not in control. If we're producing news, we never control it. It's just a great beast that's very fierce. It's very unpredictable. You don't know where it's going to go. And you're trying to grapple with it all the time. But you can never get on top of the news.
The problem with the high speed of news today is something Rob Orchard is trying to solve. He's editor of a magazine called Delayed Gratification, which deliberately reports the news 2 or 3 months after it's happened. This allows Rob and his team to be more reflective about the news than many media outlets.
I think the slow journalism movement has its roots in the ideas of slow food and slow travel, which are both all about taking your time to make something of quality. The idea is to give journalists the time to do what they do best, instead of throwing them, you know, helicoptering them into a situation, asking them to give a knee-jerk reaction to a situation that is unfolding immediately behind them, without any time to really kind of canvas expert opinion or work out what's actually going on. You give journalists, in our case, 3 months to return to stories that the rest of the media have dropped, to go back to the people who are immersed in those situations and find out what happened after the dust settled.
But it's a big challenge. Fast-paced, fast-moving news is pretty thrilling, as Rob admits.
It would be hard to come up with something more likely to draw humans in than an endless supply of high-stakes, high-drama, including fascinating characters with major issues of suspense from all around the world, fed them in real time, and every time that they search for it and they flick for it on their smartphone, they get a little hit of dopamine.
Now, let's be clear. No one is really sure if news addiction is an addiction like an addiction to drugs or gambling. But it certainly feels like that when you're reaching for your phone yet again to see if anything's happened in the world. And all this news takes up a lot of time. That's time we could be spending doing something more useful.
I just got back off a week and a half's holiday in France with my two young boys and my wife. So I had precious little time to myself. In between times, when I took a moment, when I popped to the toilet or whatever, I did what I always do, which is get out my phone and check for some updates. And part of me is appalled by that, because actually, you know, when you get just kind of a moment to yourself, it would be lovely just to think about life or just to kind of look out the window or whatever, but I'm not. I'm on my smartphone. I might as well be back in London.
But isn't there a reason we should keep up with the news? Isn't it a kind of civic duty to be aware of what's going on around us? Especially if we live in a democracy where we have the vote. Lionel Shriver.
I actually think it's kind of rubbish. I do not read the news or watch the news out of civic duty. And the truth is, I could make electoral decisions on the basis of very little information indeed. It would take half an hour out of my year to make intelligent electoral decisions in accordance with my beliefs. So, you know, I think this whole civic duty thing is something we tell ourselves when we have a problem. If democracy is working, you're probably already informed about the way you should be voting. So I'm not big on this civic duty thing.
In fact, maybe the dirty secret about news is that so long as it doesn't affect us directly, news is actually quite entertaining. Here's Mitchell Stevens again.
There's a huge amount of what's going on now that is just gripping, which means entertaining. And, you know, Donald Trump is an incredible literary character. You know, sometimes I feel as if I'm in the middle of a great novel, a really engaging novel, and it's hard to look away.
Since you're attacking us, can you give us a question?
Go ahead.
Since you are attacking our news
not
organization,
not you.
Can you give us a chance?
Your organization
you are attacking our news organization.
And there are times, I think, this moment in the United States, where the news can be as interesting as any movie, as any novel, as any television series.
Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude. No, I'm not going to give you a question. I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
I think the practical value of news has diminished and become less significant, and the entertainment value of news, which was always there, has taken over. I mean, it's, you know, there were always sensations, there were always scandals, there was always sex and violence in the news. But, you know, now I think we turn to the news to a large extent like we turn to other forms of entertainment.
And maybe the difference between news and entertainment isn't as big as we like to think.
You know, the same things that work in Greek tragedy work in news, and there's a reason for that. I mean, violence works in the theater, and violence works in news. And the reason for that is because we're all programmed to be alert to violence. News is never going to be a civics lesson. News has a tendency towards sex, towards violence, towards drama, towards misbehavior. You know, the expression, it's not news when a dog bites a man. It's news when a man bites a dog. News goes towards awfulness, and it goes towards that which is unusual, which is unexpected.
And let's face it, towards that which entertains us. Kevin Maguire.
Well, if you look at something like the Donald Trump presidency in the United States, you can look at that very seriously and you can analyse it. What's it going to mean for America? What's it going to mean for the rest of the world? But it's also a soap opera. And people watch that and they're shocked and disgusted and they are entertained by it. It's kind of crazy watching it. But because of his tweeting, his mood changes, the way he dismisses and hires and fires, it's almost as if he's still in The Apprentice. This is a huge, historical, important event, this presidency, but it also has its real humorous side. So, yes, people are entertained by news like that. You wouldn't be entertained by, say, 9/11 in the States. That was something very, very different. But a lot of news, yes, is entertaining. Do we want to be frightened a bit? I think we do, actually, in some ways. It's almost like news as part of a funfair ride. When you go on the roller coaster and you're coming down and you're going to be scared, and there's a bit of that with news, in all honesty.
I do not think there is a firm boundary between information and entertainment, because I find information entertaining. I love facts, certain kinds of facts. I find what's going on in Venezuela entertaining. After all, it's not happening to me. If I were there, I don't think I would use that word.
Was 9/11 entertaining?
In a horrible sort of way, yeah. People were glued to the television the entire day. This need for connection, this need to be part of something larger, this desire for community, if you will, is not exclusive to me. It's actually a deep human impulse. And that was such a big story that it really caught everyone up in it.
This takes us to a kind of awkward place. Sometimes when we watch the news, we can find ourselves gripped by what we're seeing, just as we are gripped by a movie, and that can feel bad. But maybe we need to be honest with ourselves about this. That we're a species that loves telling and hearing stories. And for that reason, we're never going to stop needing the news. Our challenge is to find ways of dipping into it more wisely, to take responsibility for what news we follow, and even more importantly, to decide what to do about the stories we hear. Before you go, I want to let you know about something very exciting from one of our other BBC World Service podcasts. It's something you might want to get involved in. To tell you more, from 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy, here's Tim Harford.
50 Things That Made the Modern Economy, with Tim Harford.
Hello, Tim here. If you haven't yet heard our podcast, if you don't mind me saying, it's great. From the light bulb to the clock, the battery to the barcode, 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy is all about the everyday things that have shaped our lives. And I'm here because I need your help. I want to find a 51st thing. What's the one extra thing you'd like to hear about in our podcast? You can listen to the episode about market research now to find out how you can send me your suggestion. The deadline is 12 noon GMT on Friday the 8th of September. So get downloading now. Just search for 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy on your podcast app, or you can go straight to the website all about my search for the 51st thing. It's bbcworldservice.com/51things. That's 51 as in 5-1. bbcworldservice.com/51things.